The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Welcome to another edition of Analyze This here on your NPR station in the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX FM, with yours truly, Neville James. Just got a text message here, so. It's a beautiful day in paradise, for real. I came over the top of the hill. I saw the waters were a tidbit rough. Like what we were told yesterday by Manuel, what we call the weather service, but good weather. 80 degrees thereabouts on the way in. Hopefully, it'll remain around that way. I know we're in the transition part of the year. The dry season is no more. We're starting to get those showers and... you know, with showers, come humidity, right? But it could get hot when you think about it, you know. For example, you know, you park your car during the day for an extended period, and when you get back inside, that's when you feel the heat. And you don't want to hurry up and drive and make sure get some air circulation. And all that good stuff. So we're supposed to get Stan Joins from the Yacht Club joining us this morning. Also, Zeno Bean making a return appearance. Of course, you know, they got a community meeting, I believe, is Thursday or Tuesday. Let's see what day it is. Thursday the 18th. Yeah, Thursday the 18th. They got a community meeting. Department of Justice has a building there in. I would think that's Estate Lorraine, right? When you leave the Via Lorraine intersection and you're heading north, right? You're traveling from south to north on North Shore Road, right? And right when you before you make the bend to head towards Bon Esperance and the Glen area, on the right-hand side, Department of Justice has a building there. So... we're supposed to have a community meeting there, and basically, as Zeno said last week, it's really about receiving public comment and getting a feel for the sentiment of the people here. On the island. And of course, you know, we've been dealing with a matter that since January of 2012 where the refinery was shuttered. And ever since then, you know, they've tried, there was like multi-billion dollar reinvestment to try to restart it. And you know, I had been told by one of my insiders who had worked in a refinery since the 80s that the folks that Arclight, who had came in and bought the terminal, restarted the terminal, and then looked at the viability of restarting the refinery and decided to make the plunge and invested significant money between 19 and 20 into 21. I had been told, one of my boys, that some of the guys that they had contracted really didn't know what they were doing. You know, some people believe that they're contractors, but remember now, refinery is contracting and high level of engineering. And just a simple matter as relates to the emissions up top is what was, you know, creating black rain, man. You know what I'm saying? So, to summarize what actually happened in terms of how it impacted us, the reconstruction part was excellent for our economy. Because a lot of people are working. They're working a lot of hours at a high hourly rate. But in the end, it turned out to be disastrous, you know, given the results and how it was impacting the economy. You know, so it was like truly bittersweet. And, we then in the crossroads there, you know, so EPA. And then the current president, he's not big on fossil fuel, right? Even though we're doing more drilling than we ever did before on the mainland. And what you have is contrast in the political realm where Democrats and progressives are not necessarily big on, well, they're pro-environment, put it that way, right? And the Republicans, you know, they're pro-oil, you know, and that was actually a big issue in the 2020 campaign with then-President Trump and candidate Biden. And clearly the answer is somewhere in the middle, because you are talking about a lot of people that, you know, move around and all that stuff on the mainland. But for us here, it's been 12 plus years. And yes, the economy thrived, you know, with a functioning refinery. But there were some environmental ramifications, in some instances medical. So it's always about balancing what you're doing for the greater good. So we'll see how that one pans out. Looking forward to talking with General Ben. Stan joins from, supposed to be joining us from the Yacht Club. I like talking to Stan. He's a big time historian. And when I talk with him, you know, it's really always enlightening and all that stuff. So yesterday, switching to the news of the day, and I always say this, right? You know, PBS and CNN, right? Yeah, which is, you know, I'm biased towards PBS for obvious reasons, and then CNN was actually one of the first two cable networks that I used to watch regularly when we got cable TV for the first time in 1981. But given how we have MSNBC on the left and Fox News on the right, I personally think that they have added value to the impartial or the networks that are supposed to be impartial, to include PBS and the CNNs of the world. And it's been painful, you know, to watch the standard bearer for news, because it's like in sports, right? ESPN's the standard bearer, but CNN's supposed to be the standard bearer for news, and it looks like sometimes they drop the ball, right? But as relates to yesterday with the coverage for what was, you know, infamously historic, with a former president actually having to sit in a courtroom and go through the process of the preliminary phase of a criminal trial. And that coverage at the stadium in downtown New York and covering that and all that stuff, that was wild. Okay? And you know, we like to enjoy breaking that down here and all that stuff. And, you know, so I went to this catch and kill thing or justification that the district attorney, Alvin Bragg, mentioned last year when he announced the indictments. Right? It really is a fascinating thing that has less to do with Trump and more to do with media. Okay? And as time goes on, you're going to see, you know, how the catch and kill dynamic plays out. And in this case, it's the National Enquirer. Right? And I think AMI is the name that they use. The name of the peering company, right? And apparently what they would do is when they would find out about a story for someone they supported, they would go and catch it and pay to kill it. And in this case, I've always wondered, you know, well, why is Trump being charged? And hold on here, I'm trying to pull this thing up. Who owns AMI, National Enquirer? Okay. Yeah. And the reality is, during the 2016 election, some things about him that they thought would have been detrimental to his campaign, right? As relates to relationships and all that stuff. And AMI was a big supporter, but even it goes even further, you know, farther, right, than that, right? They not only went and caught these stories, and that's how you get the Stormy Daniels and the Karen McDougals and all that stuff involved. They actually created things about Hillary Clinton. You know what I'm saying? And this is wild. And I was like, wondering, you know, because last week he was just filing motions on a daily basis. Monday, Tuesday, appealing, Wednesday, 3 days in a row, and he was getting denied in record time. So I was like, wait a minute, you got more to this? This looked like a salacious, tawdry type, you know, tabloid type thing. You know, I know he's going to be embarrassed about it, you know. So that's probably why you're going to these extremes. But then the more you dig deep, the more you realize that this thing is crazy. You know? One of the people them text me and says, CNN is a new Fox. Newsmax, what do you think? They're even more extreme than Fox News. You know what I'm saying? But the catch and kill thing, they weren't only, you know, intercepting, you know, the and buying the stories and putting these non-disclosure, you know, agreements in place, but this thing was so sophisticated, and this is what, 7 and a half years ago? Yeah, 7 and a half to be exact, because October 2016, and we're in April of 2024, right? This thing was so sophisticated that they were, while they were buying negative stories, well, potentially negative stories about Trump, they were literally creating stories about Hillary Clinton. Like, she got 6 months to live. And you know something? There's a limit to how far people should go when it comes to politicking. right? And is Bill Chelsea's father and all kind of nonsense? Look, I done an NPR station now, right? So I gotta be careful, right? About how people will interpret what I'm saying. But these are the type of things, right, that'll cause nonviolent and non-confrontational people, you know, to want to consider doing very irrational things. Now, I understand you're in politics and, you know, you're trying to win. But this is sick, right? I never heard this type of thing when Mitt Romney was going up against Obama in 2012, McCain against Obama in 2008, Kerry. I mean, they used to call Kerry a flip-flopper, but that's on policies, right? Kerry versus Bush, Bush versus Gore, Dole versus Clinton, Clinton versus Bush 1 and Ross Perot. You know, I mean, Clinton's situation, that was about his, you know, philandering and all that stuff, right? But this thing about getting in bed with the National Enquirer, right, and literally creating stories, right? And there's something else going on that the public isn't hip to as yet, because his name is David Pecker and this other fella, they've been communicating with Alvin Bragg. So that means that clearly there has to have been maybe some violations on their part that they are now trying to minimize the damage legally, if in fact they have been testifying and meeting with the New York City DA. And if that's if in fact that's accurate, now we know why we had all of these motions last week by Trump to want to dismiss these charges and want to dismiss this case for something that he said is a sham and he's innocent for. They got what we've seen so far is the kata, okay? Based on what we've seen early on, the bundle is to come. And me gonna lie to you, ultimately, you know what this is about? America embarrassing itself over and over again. The leader of the free world. And that's why the Putins of the world enjoy themselves. And, you know, this, he just basically embracing what Khrushchev said back in the day. We don't have to kill the West. The West can kill itself. And when you're electing folks based on popularity as opposed to deliverance of goods, they ain't gonna work. They ain't gonna even get to the Truth Social platform yesterday, losing another 18%. That's embarrassing, you know, in and of itself. So we'll take a break. Be back right after this. Hopefully Mr. Joyne's gonna join us. We'll talk to you right after this.
The Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, we give you a chance to impress your friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists. You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. Wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Morning Edition takes you across this country and around the world with stories that keep you informed and the context to understand what matters. The news comes at you quickly, but we slow it down to examine each story from different angles and give perspective on what might happen next. A brand new day comes with new possibilities and a new edition of Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're joined by we're back here analyze this. We're joined by Stan Joins, right? pull the microphone closer if you will. Good morning.
Good morning.
Teacher Joins, how are you?
Great, man.
I'm doing good, doing good.
Thank you. Good to be here, Neville.
Always good to have you here, right? The historian that you are and all that stuff. Mr. Georgia, how you doing?
Great,
man. How you been?
Super. Just finished racing in St. Thomas in the regatta and then in the BVI in the regatta. And now we've got our regatta this coming weekend.
You got the trophy? You got that money or what, man?
Oh, man. I didn't take my boat this year. It's got some equipment problems. And so I jumped on a 70-footer with a friend.
Okay.
And it was really fun riding on a big boat.
No. Check this out. Define regatta. And the type of boats and all that stuff that we've been hearing this all our lives, but some of us, we don't know squat. You know what I'm saying? So break that down for the audience. We live in the islands, but we're beach types. We're not boat types. So break that down for those.
Oh, but St. Croix was a boat type.
I know.
The days were there, man. Everybody's just forgotten.
John Kennedy's. Jack Kennedy, Joseph, I think, is the father, right? That's his name, Joe Kennedy, right?
Yeah,
he knows about boats in St. Croix, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. We had one of his schooners here riding when I got here.
They did a lot of, they did bootleg, they had crazy bootlegging going on.
That's how they made their money.
That's how they made their money.
Hollow steering wheels.
That's right, Green Key. For those of you who don't know, right, when you come into St. Croix and you look and you see Buck Island, which is a national park, and then you see another smaller island, which is Green Key. Right? That was where they would come in, do what they got to do, and head back up, I guess, to the Northeast, right? Because he was from Massachusetts, right?
Well, Lime Tree Bay and Salt River were also used.
Salt River and where?
Lime Tree Bay.
All the way down on the south side?
Before Hovensa bulldozed everything and then built everything in concrete. You know, that was a harbor for centuries and centuries.
Okay. So they come around the south side. Get all of that rum, all that stuff, and then work their way back around the island, and then head north. The current would take them, so they were going against the typical current coming down, right? And then you work with the current heading back.
Well, coming down, you head away. You cross the Gulf Stream and then head down when you're east of the Gulf Stream.
Yeah.
You head down and you come here, and then when you're going back up, you let all that carry you back up.
All that carry you back up, and they were taking this all the way back up to the Northeast, not Florida.
They were taking it wherever that somebody would give them money for it. Business.
Money, right? Business. That was big business back in the day, you know?
So, yeah, it was. Well, watch this, right? When you walk into Bank of St. Croix.
Yeah.
And you stand there at the door and look straight ahead.
Yeah.
There's a big photograph on the wall, black and white.
Correct.
It's about 4 foot by 6 foot. Can you tell me what's in it?
If I could tell you what's in
it.
That's the mural?
No, it's a photograph.
No, I'm talking about, but I know there was a photograph of the, what was it? Hotel on the Key?
It has it in it.
Yeah.
Hotel on the Key's in the background.
Hotel on the Key's in the background. Yeah.
Or rather, the key is in the background.
The key's in the background.
Is in the background. Not Hotel on the Key, the key.
Yeah.
But what's in the foreground?
That ain't the Christiansted Wharf and the whole area there?
You got a good memory. Keep going.
No, I'm actually trying to piece together something that I did with actually what is in that photo, because I'm aware of the fact that the Kennedys, when John F. Kennedy became president, he had in the White House swimming pool, they painted that whole area, the downtown Christiansted Wharf area, right, in the White House swimming pool. So, yeah. And I think Bernard was the name of the painter. Bernard something. I think that was the name of the painter, or whatever. So, but explain to the public, because I ain't really trying to butcher this. Tell what are we looking at? What are we talking about?
All right, I'm a history nerd.
Yeah.
So, you know, a long time ago when I walk in that bank, before it was even Bank of St. Croix, I look across the
Barclays Bank.
Yeah, yeah. I look across the wall, I see this picture.
Yeah.
It's a photograph. It's a huge photograph. Mm-hmm. It's got a wharf, the Christiansted Wharf,
yeah,
the Christiansted Seawall. It's got West Indian home-built boats. I ain't talking about varnished mahogany and brass portholes. I'm talking about planks you sawed locally, right? And mm-hmm. you put together and you made your sloops and your schooners the way they had for centuries. And they're 4 and 5 deep tied up on that seawall. They're unloading hundreds of 55-gallon gasoline drums.
Wow.
And there are trucks there to pick them up. Now, to this history nerd, I looked at that photograph and it made no sense at all.
That's 40s, 30s, 40s? Right after the Great Depression or during?
It made no sense.
Yeah.
It should have been steel ships unloading gasoline,
yeah,
or schooners unloading hay. I mean, what the heck, right? Mm-hmm. And to be picked up by wagons. It should have been these home-built sloops and schooners, West Indian sloops and schooners, tied up to the wall unloading all this gasoline, hundreds of drums of gasoline. So I went to the source of knowledge for sailing on St. Croix, Llewellyn Westerman. You know, he was born on St. Kitts.
I know Westerman. His son and I were the same age, and his son used to go to Good Hope School.
I went to Llewellyn. I said, man, what's up with this? Because this is driving me crazy. It doesn't make any sense. And he laughed and laughed and laughed. He said, Sten, you ever been drunk? I said, no. He says, you're going to be. He says, you're going to go to St. Martin. Next time you sail to St. Martin this summer, you're going to carry a bottle of Courvoisier. You're going to anchor at Grand Casse. You're going to go ashore. You're going to walk into the police station just a block in. You're going to walk around behind the police station to a little shack. You're going to knock on the door of the shack, and a man named Nono is going to answer the door, a little bitty guy.
No.
In St. Kitts. Did you know him?
No.
This is St. Martin.
St. Martin.
So I did. That summer I sailed to St. Martin. I did exactly as Lou said. I'm knocking on the door.
Yeah.
This little man in a beater and boxers answers the door. He's 5'4", maybe 100 pounds, old. Looks at me, glares at me. What's this white boy want at my door? I hold up the bottle of Courvoisier. I say, Llewellyn sent me.
Yeah.
Big smile.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Yeah.
2 shot glasses. Sat down at the table and we finished the bottle. It's the only time in my life I have been so... I've never been like that. That little man could drink. Oh, Jesus. So this is what I learned, right?
Mm-hmm.
In World War II, Germany conquered France. They turned Martinique into a U-boat base. They were sinking everything coming through the Panama Canal and up from South America, which was desperate for Britain because Venezuelan oil is what was keeping the Battle of Britain alive from England's standpoint. The Middle East had been taken by Italy. And until we took it back, Venezuela was their only source for getting gasoline into those airplanes.
Now, for those who are listening, World War II is where
World War II, yes.
That's what you're referencing, right?
Yes.
39 to 45.
Yep.
Right? So what part of that six-year window are we talking about?
Okay, right now we're talking about 39, 40, 41.
Yeah.
Now, when America jumped in the war,
yeah,
Great Britain needed our help
in
making sure those tankers coming from Venezuela were safe. And of course, we built a base in Chacaramas in northwestern Trinidad along with everybody else and an airfield. And then we built an airfield here on St. Croix, which is the airport we fly in and out of now. Built by the U.S. Navy early in 1942.
The Alexander Hamilton Airport that is now the Henry Rolson Airport.
That's correct.
Okay.
So the Navy stocked it with Grumman Gooses coming in and out. Yeah. And those Grumman Gooses...
Hold on to that photo. That's the photo.
Yeah, so those Grumman Gooses were going out at night with their radar looking for German U-boats on the surface charging their batteries.
Wow.
If they found anything, they would radio in to the PT boat base in Salt River Bay, which was on the east side in Triton, the Triton side. They had a dock with 265-foot PT boats. Nono showed me a photograph, a Quonset hut sitting where that orange house is now, and where that little sailboat, Southern Wind, is sunk was a dock with 265-foot PT boats tied to it.
Nono in St. Martin was showing you photographs of...
Nono lived on St. Croix for 50 years.
Yeah, sure.
He was a St. Croix sailor. He was born by Bay-Lambourcheur, but on the French side, but he lived on St. Croix for 50 years.
Another photo I showed you, that's Bernard Lamont, I think his name is. He's the one who... I guess, took the photos and then painted the mural into the White House pool when Kennedy was there, man.
Amazing.
Yeah. So everything has some connectivity.
All right, so here's what happened. The U-boat sunk everything coming into St. Croix, Puerto Rico, or any of the British islands. Nothing made it in. All the inter-island freighters, the Mary H., all of that, done.
Germany?
Sunk. Germany. The U-boat sunk them.
The U.S. sunk all of these
boats. No, Germany did.
Germany sunk the U-boats, right? Sunk all of these boats. They were where? How far out?
They were right here. Nothing made it into St. Croix. Ships were sunk right off the coast of St. Croix. Your grandparents would know this. Nothing was making it into St. Croix. No food, no furniture, toys, no ammunition for the planes or the PT boats, no gasoline, nothing.
This is pre-41.
This is 1942, early 1942.
Oh, 42. Okay.
We had jumped into the war, and now the U-boats started sinking. Everything trying to come into St. Croix or St. Thomas, nothing made it
in. Now, one of my listeners, right, out of St. Thomas, I don't even know, because I haven't heard from her or about her in a while, because she was 90 when she reached out to me. Her name is Noe Bailey, right? She had written a book. She is from Canada. And so I went over to, I was over in St. Thomas the weekend in February of 2021. We didn't have the fear because we were dealing with COVID and all that stuff, right? And so she's from Belle Island in Canada. And she was telling me, and you know, she was 90 at the time when we met. We had lunch up there by Sibs and all that stuff. And she was telling me that the German U-boats came over to Canada and was doing that kind of damage as well.
They were doing it all in the Caribbean and Atlantic, of course they were.
Up there by Newfoundland, right? And I was like, wow. When we were thinking about Germany and their impact, we were thinking European theater. But they really had intentions of dominating the world.
But torpedoing ships off Canada is not as big a deal as trying to get those tankers coming up from Venezuela.
I know that.
Everything coming through the Panama Canal.
Yeah.
Or everything, all the food coming up from South America. Mm-hmm. Now Caribbean was the U-boat haven.
So America not only did significant damage in the Pacific Rim, Indo. Right, that's what they call it, Indo-Pacific, right, over there in Japan.
Japan,
right? But here in the western part of the world,
the war was here. So every steel ship in the Caribbean was sunk. The U-boats, if they didn't waste a torpedo on them, if they were too small, they'd surface, use their deck gun, sink them, and go away.
Mm-hmm.
Then the U-boat would disappear. So everything was sunk. When the Navy figured out that we couldn't even get food into St. Croix, people were going to starve, the Navy figured out that the only people that were sailing back and forth with impunity were the local guys. They were sailing on their home-built sloops and schooners with no engines. The U-boats could not hear them.
Ooh.
Nono told me about a friend of his whose home-built schooner did have an engine, and when you cut it on when the wind died, a U-boat surfaced and sunk him.
Wow.
So you could not use your engine, only sailors. And so for World War II, the sailors who had been smuggling blue jeans and radios over to St. Bart's and St. Martin and coming back with wine and cheese they didn't pay taxes on, who had, of course, been running rum before that, now these sailors are heroes. The Navy drafts them, requisitions their boats, puts them into the Navy. They're sailing between our base and Chagaramas to all the Caribbean's islands of the Allies, including us, and bringing our food and bringing the gasoline for the Grumman Goose is sailing, flying out of the airport looking for those U-boats and bringing the ammunition for those PT boats to go out and try to sink them, mm-hmm. bringing everything we needed on St. Croix just to survive, and St. Thomas and Puerto Rico. And those schooners are all that we had. Those guys were sailing in everything. Nono showed me a picture of his boat. There's a big crate on the bow of his schooner. I say, what's in that? He says, a Jeep. They had torpedoes that were tied inside his lifelines to bring him up. And they're unloading all this gasoline for those Grumman Gooses to go out and look for the U-boats and for those PT boats to fly out and try to sink them.
So now I just Googled German U-boats St. Croix. And they say on July 24th, 1942, HMCS St. Croix sank a German U-boat while escorting a convoy in the North Atlantic. HMCS St. Croix was a Royal Canadian Navy destroyer during the Second World War that was named after the river in New Brunswick. Not the island of St. Croix, the river, right? There's also St. Croix River up in Wisconsin.
This Holy Cross, man.
I think it's Wisconsin or Minnesota. I think it's Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
On July 24, 1942, the warship sank the German submarine U-90 that was part of a wolf pack of enemy U-boats attacking Allied convoy. Pictured is a war painting depicting the ship's cramped bridge during that during this action. And Ronald Wayman is the person who did this photo and all that stuff. So,
Now, see, that ties into that photograph of Banca St. Croix. Yeah. All those home-built schooners and sloops are there at the wharf unloading gasoline because the only boats that could come in from 1942 to 1945, they couldn't have an engine. It was just the local sailors. And St. Croix was filled with local sailors.
Fishermen. No, I got to do my research on the HMCS St. Croix.
So now, after the war, the Navy looked at all of our local sailors and said, you're heroes. You know, Alec, Tutine.
Bomba Alec, yeah. Wilfred Bomba Alec out in the West. Yeah.
Bomba, Tuit, Tutine. Yeah. No, the Navy looked at them and said, you know what, you're heroes, and thank you for your service, but now we know you. So they gave them medallions to take tourists to Buck Island, and Llewellyn Westerman and his brother Inglor grew up passing out life jackets on their boats, and they taught Llewellyn and Glue how to sail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they also helped found the St. Croix Yacht Club. The St. Croix Yacht Club, and say that smile every time you say it, because this is Bumba Alik founding the St. Croix Yacht Club, okay? No, hold on, it was a joke.
Hold on. I know that you're the teacher, but I'm going to teach you this, Martin. Right? I want you to pronounce it the right way, right?
Okay.
Bumba Alik. Emphasis. accent on the first syllable. Bumba Alik. Yeah, it's actually, you say both names, right? Bomba Alec. Okay, yeah.
And so, Doc Peterson used to have stories about how he used to run him from his house.
Yeah, because his son, Myron, was a great athlete, two-sport player, professionals. I'm talking real good, baseball and basketball. And then his other son, Juni Bomba, who named the same as him. You know Juni Bomba, right?
I know Juni very well. Used to race against.
So these were great, great boatmen, man.
So they founded the St. Croix Yacht Club.
Okay.
They called it a yacht club as a joke. It was a sailing club. And these guys would go out on Sundays from there on the wharf in Christiansted and race their fishing, you know, their fishing boats and their Buck Island boats, their schooners against each other. And that started the regattas. The regatta is sailing boats racing against each other. So these guys joined together with some guys who come down from the States on the boats, like Ted Dale, you know, the Comanche.
These guys. What's his name? Wallace Williams mentions Ted Dale all the time. You know what I'm saying? From the Florence Williams Library.
Right.
Yeah, he mentions him all the time. But it's interesting how, you know, we're talking German U-boats and what they did around the island of St. Croix. And there was, it's ironic, actually. And there was literally a boat out of Canada named St. Croix that did significant damage to U-boats. I mean, wow, it's a small world, man.
AU boat, there were hundreds.
I know.
But a navy
boat named St. Croix, you know what I'm saying, was a damager. You know what I'm saying? So, I'm learning, man. History this morning. You know what I mean? A history major. You know, I'm just lapping this up. We'll take a break. Come back. We'll talk about the St. Croix Yacht Club. They got an anniversary or something coming this week?
We got a regatta.
Regatta, yeah. And we're gonna get you to define regatta and what takes place at regattas and boat competitions, you know, all that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So we'll take a break. We got Teacher Joins here in the studio. Be back right after this.
Race is complicated. On Code Switch, we don't dumb it down for you.
And on Life Kit, we have advice on everything from money to mental health.
It's Code Switch and Life Kit from NPR.
Saturdays at 2 p.m. on WTJX FM.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
You know a good story when you hear it. Makes you feel, laugh, think. Sometimes you get a little teary. I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday, and each week we bring you stories from around the country and around the world. Stories that help you learn, make you smile, catch you by surprise. Please join us every Saturday for the news you need and the stories
you won't forget.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
There are many complex issues that arise in our territory.
Comes with the Territory with Leslie Comision.
Join me, Leslie Comision, for a breakdown of political issues facing our territory, one conversation at a time. I'm here to be the voice you can rely on for information that is straightforward and comprehensive. Tune in to be a part of the discussion. It all comes with the territory.
Comes with the Territory airs Sundays at 1 p.m. and re-airs at 7 p.m. on WTJX-TV, Channel 12.
Weekday mornings are a juggle, sometimes even a struggle. Morning Edition from NPR News eases you into your day and keeps you company through the chaos of a busy morning. Hear interviews that give you context on the day's biggest stories, along with reporting and updates on the latest breaking news. Stay on top of the world with Morning Edition every weekday.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're back here, Analyze This. I'm getting my history lessons from the one only Stan Joins, retired music teacher from St. Croix Central High School, a Boulder par excellence. Good morning once again, Mr. Joins. Glad to have you in the studio.
Morning, Neville James.
Okay, good. So, you mentioned Bomba Alec and others. Oh, here's the deal, right? the Jones Act, right? And now your name is Joins, not Jones, right?
That's correct. Right? Don't confuse.
But the Jones Act, you know, came about in 1920. Congress passed a law restricting all trade between U.S. ports to American-flagged vessels crewed by U.S. citizens. After the First World War, Congress's idea was to protect the country's merchant marine from foreign competition so that the United States would have plenty of boats and able-bodied sailors at the ready in case the Germans came after the U.S. again in their submarines. The law known as the Jones Act is the naval equivalent of the Second Amendment. If it was ever likely that merchant marine vessels could have stopped an enemy U-boat, it's far less likely that they'll stop an intercontinental ballistic missile. The law has outlived its original purpose. So this is a Washington Post article from June of 2015, some 9 years ago. Right, close to 9 years ago. The reason why I mentioned the Jones Act is because that was critical for us with respect to the refinery, because we actually needed an exemption to the Jones Act to allow for that oil to come into St. Croix for it to manufacture and all that stuff. More reasons why they owe us this money, and we want the money, the gasoline excise taxes.
Rum, right? Watches.
Yeah, rum, watches, the works, everything about manufacturing. So I'm glad we brought that up, and you know, I like researching. When I pull up stuff like this, it kind of, you know, makes the brain, you know, it stimulates the brain, and all that stuff. So the Virgin Islands, not just St. Croix by itself or St. Thomas, St. John, which is a marina haven, we have significant historical relevance as it relates to America's existence today.
I could go a lot more into that, but let's just stick with sailing for right now.
Yeah.
So only 7 years after the war was over,
yeah,
those guys founded the St. Croix Yacht Club.
This is 52 you're talking about?
52,
yeah.
Which was 5 years before St. Thomas Yacht Club was ever founded. And they'd go out from
five
the waterfront.
Before?
5 years before St. Thomas ever started their yacht club.
The yacht club, okay, yeah. Okay.
So these guys would go out and just race their boats, their sailboats, man. They called them yachts, but they were just their, you know, little island schooners and sloops. And, of course, Ted Dale had the Comanche, which was a nice boat.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they'd all just go out and race against each other, and they'd come up with these handicaps, which never worked. The math never works. You just go out and sail and have fun, and whoever wins, you call it winning, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, so it's still alive. The yacht club... those guys managed to buy a really pretty piece of property out east a couple of years later by you know, hundreds of them getting together and all pulling a little bit together to buy this piece of property.
And property up there was cheap at the time.
Yes.
Because people used to say, why are you buying property up there dry? You shouldn't buy any property up there. And we had a couple of families, right, that actually made that investment And in the end,
the Skulls, the Robux.
The Skulls, the Robux, Hendrix, Christian Hendrix. They bought property up there. And 40 years later, right, in 1990, let's just say 35 years later, in 1990, an acre was going for $100,000 an acre up there in Solitude, Teague Bay, Cotton Valley, that whole area.
It is pretty, but it's hot. You ain't going to farm there.
It was dry, you know what I'm saying? And that man spent that money, and ultimately, yo, patience really is a virtue. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they went up there and they fished
the
and they had goats.
Yeah, the goats.
They didn't raise any crops, but they fished and had goats.
They were farmers, though.
Goats worked.
Yeah, goat. That's right. Yeah, guy. Goat could eat grass.
Anything, right?
Yeah. Right? So the yacht club, based on what you're saying, they had a 70-year anniversary a couple years ago.
That's right.
Wow. When I went to the yacht club for the first time, when I was in fourth or fifth grade, our class, every class in St. Dunstan's had a beach day towards the end of the year, and ours was at the yacht club. And they got barracuda and all kind of thing up there, man.
It's just beautiful.
It is. And right across the street was
Farley Dickinson,
the Farley Dickinson University, yep. The lab and all that stuff. So we got Regatta this week.
Yes.
And the racing's still alive.
We're still racing sailboats
What edition of the Regatta is this?
This is the 31st, because we didn't do one year during COVID.
Okay.
But 31st.
So it started in 34, in 94?
Started in 92.
92.
With Nick Castruccio.
Okay,
Captain Nick Castruccio, retired from the U.S. Navy. He started the Regatta. He got boats in from all the different islands to come join us and have fun. Created the parties, created the whole thing, got a committee together, Karen Stanton, Julie San Martin.
What time is it? What time is the regatta?
So this regatta is, we'll race Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay.
The captain's meeting is on Thursday, and everybody's invited to the parties because we want everybody to come remember the sailing legacy of St. Croix and have fun with us in this beautiful piece of dirt out there and in the beautiful waters. And if you're not sailing with us, if you got anything that floats, come out. We'll give you a provisional handicap and put you out there racing with us. But if you don't, then just come and enjoy the place, have lunch, enjoy the parties at night. We've got Kurt Schindler on Thursday for the skipper's meeting. In the evening, we've got Tony Richards and Bobby and Lenny Larson coming down and doing some R&B, Earth, Wind, and Fire and Temptations on Friday night.
Lenny, good morning, Lenny, man. Long time I hear from you, man. Good morning, Lenny. Yeah.
And on Saturday, we've got Kalichi coming with Kiki and the Fire Dancers. And on Sunday, Llewellyn Westerman is going to strum. So everybody come out and just help us have a good time and celebrate the sailing legacy St. Croix.
Lenny's dad and my dad go way back.
He's a genuinely wonderful person.
Buddy Larson. And he was a boatman in his own right, too. You know what I mean? But he's a fish. He like the fish go late. And all that stuff. So Buddy Larson, a great, great man. He and Tony Felix did some bodyguard work for El Shabazz Malik.
Wow.
That's right. El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, a.k.a. Malcolm Little.
Yes.
Out of Omaha, Nebraska, Detroit Red, Malcolm X.
That's amazing.
And they were there at the Audubon.
Wow.
Yeah. When you talk to Lenny.
Lenny never told me that.
Well, Lenny, I'm telling it now.
He and I walloped each other in the dojo for years.
No, Lenny, I know Daddy passed and my father passed, Tony Felix passed, but they were in the Audubon room.
Good God.
When Malcolm X was assassinated. Oh, yes.
Lenny
it was 1965. Yeah. And what had happened was, at the time, my dad was a senator, and he and Ralph Paiwanski were, that was his map. You know what I'm saying? And back then, and when that happened, guys had to get out of New York. Right? So some guys, and Buddy told me this, right? Some guys, you know, went to Boston. And then they had to get, you know, Boston was the first getaway spot. And then eventually they had to, you know, do what they had to do. And it was time to come back home because these guys were originally from St. Croix. You know what I'm saying? And so they worked their way back home. And I found this out way, you know, my 40s, 50s. You know, I'm 60 now. But we got a lot of history, man. And that's why I love talking. And I apologize to the audience. But this is why I love talking about this migration of Virgin Islanders to New York City all the time, because there's a lot of historical significance that took place over a 70-year period.
More than that.
Right.
More than that.
Sir?
John Gottlieb Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
Hello.
No. Bordeaux.
Bordeaux. Yeah, but I said that to spell it for you.
because his
name was Bordeaux.
Okay, yeah.
And of course, Christians pronounce it Bordeaux.
Of course. Also, so you're saying that his name was B-O-R-D-E-A-U-X?
Yes.
Seriously, the French spelling?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
And we call him Bordeaux.
Yes.
Wow.
Nobody knows his name, but we found it in the census records. Okay. A lady doing some research a while ago that presented to the
Bordeaux society. Bordeaux is a popular estate in St. Thomas. You know what I'm saying? Down west, right?
Well, he was from here. He was born here. His father was here.
And so he wasn't from St. Kitts or Nevis. He was from St. Croix.
Yes. Yes, wow. They've got him being born on the census records at this on the estate. And his father.
Yo, man, you educated me, man. I love it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, listen, after people were free, right, after the emancipation, the Danes put him on the frigate and sent him down to Trinidad and told him, never come back. Is a troublemaker, right? And they tried to get him to admit who his accomplices were the whole way down.
Oh, so he was a problem child.
They tortured him a little bit. They tried to get him to admit, they wanted him to admit that von Schulten was on his side and that they had worked this out together. Because things worked too pat. For instance, when the fort went to open fire on the insurrectionists, they found that in the gunpowder bags was nothing but beach sand.
Ooh.
And that was an inside job.
Wow.
So they wanted him to implicate von Schulten, but he wouldn't. And whether he should have or could have or not, that's just up for history, man. Nobody knows for sure. I ain't going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But Bordeaux then, his best friend on St. Croix was the commander of the Black Militia when 1848, when the fights started.
Mm-hmm.
They opposed each other. They opposed each other here at Basin. Yep, but they were best friends.
Mm-hmm.
And from Trinidad, his friend couldn't remain on St. Croix after emancipation, after fighting with the Danes.
Yeah.
So he moved to New York. And then somebody wrote, and Bordeaux ends up sailing to New York and staying with his friend, a.k.a. adversary, the man who had commanded the Black Militia against him, who was his best friend.
After 1848?
In 1850, the two of them were living together in a boarding house in New York.
What?
Now, they're working with the Underground Railroad. And Bordeaux ends up managing a house for escapees for the Underground Railroad. And that goes on. This is all, it's in my book, but I'm not the one who found it. It's this lady who found it and presented it to the Society of VI Historians a couple of years ago. So he's up there doing that. He married a girl, but then his girl had an affair with a guy who was staying at the boarding house, and they had a big split and a fight, and that ends up in police records. And then some Portuguese people, and remember, this is before emancipation in America. The slave trade was illegal, but not slavery. And so there's some Portuguese entrepreneurs who are in New York knocking black people in the head who are free and taking them back down to Charleston and selling them. And Bordeaux's group had a big street fight with them. And Bordeaux ended up in jail.
In New York City.
And there was a big gang war. And Bordeaux ends up in jail and he has to get out of town. The Portuguese want him and so do the police. So he ends up sailing for Grenada. And he's spent the rest of his days there.
Oh.
But that's a fascinating history.
Wow.
And this is the same man who...
No, Admiral... You know. They had an Admiral... What was it? Mitchell? Oh, Martin. They had some name that was a part of this... part of the emancipation. What was the name of his best friend? You know?
Oh, Lord. They say another name named Moses, but obviously that wasn't...
No.
Bordeaux's
name was... You said John Gottlieb, but it wasn't Moses. Yeah. Moses Gottlieb. That wasn't him.
No, Moses was getting it confused with another guy.
Okay.
Yep.
Wow. So you're saying that our thing wasn't from the 1890s. Well, the major migration was from the 1890s.
There was already a connection.
But the connectivity was from the 1440s.
In the 1840s, there was already a connection between New York and St. Croix.
40 or 50 years before that. Wow.
Yes. Virgin Islanders.
Back then, there was a boat by the name of the Catherine. Look that up, Catherine. That a lot of West Indians used to take, in particular from St. Croix and the Virgin Islands, to New York. The Catherine. And they had no plane back then. You know what I'm saying? So you had to move in by boat. Let me ask you a question. What's the relationship between the St. Croix Yacht Club and the St. Thomas Yacht Club? Because you mentioned they were formed 5 years after. What's the relationship today?
None, really. It's just a bunch of people who love to sail on both islands. Mm-hmm. St. Thomas Yacht Club, I think there was a guy from Estonia who was there who was a big sailor.
Okay, Admiral Martin King. That's the name. That's the fella who was a part of the emancipation with Bodo.
Bodo, okay.
So look, I know you don't look at
a bit of research. Him up.
So you're saying that...
Well, I don't know.
St. Thomas Yacht Club is just the St. Thomas Yacht Club. People like boats. St. Croix Yacht Club is just people who like boats.
Well, and then there's the social club. We got some older folks who come out and want to enjoy a lunch on a Sunday or a dinner on a Wednesday and look out over the beautiful ocean and the sailboat sitting at their moorings. Mm-hmm. And so they join the club for that. They're older, and they help us pay the bills. Mm-hmm. They help us pay the bills. Without them helping pay those bills, we couldn't sail.
Thank you, Haney. Thank you, Haney, for that confirmation. I know it was Martin. But Admiral Martin King, yes. So I think it's safe to say, because last week I was talking about Leidesdorf, right? And you know, so me and Dwayne Henry were talking about that and saying, yo, we got to do that movie. You know what I'm saying? So I met Judge Willacks because, you know, he's a writer in a par excellence. I said, look, we're doing it. We're going to do the movie. You know what I'm saying? Because that would be a beautiful, because he was the first black millionaire. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And founded modern-day San Francisco, Yerba Buena, and all that stuff. So that would be a beautiful thing. So, you know, over the weekend, I was racking my brains and all that stuff. So I'm learning about screenplays, the amount of scenes in a movie, and X amount of time, all that stuff. So I wanted to get into that because there's a history component, a research component that I love. Right? So our thing, we want reparations from the Danes, right? I'm a part of that, but I'm not going to deny that the Danes had value when they were here, right? What they did to us was totally unconscionable, what they were treating our grandparents and our ancestors and all that stuff. I agree with that, but they were intelligent and skilled people. You could tell from the buildings, Stan. That's the Danish buildings built here, watching hurricanes like it's nothing, and modern day buildings crumbling. There has to be some value there.
I'm not going to go there, man. That ain't sailing history, and I'm here about sailing history today, man.
Today. But you live here for 30 plus years, right? You could see.
And my grandmother had two grandmothers. One was a Nishani, who was Cherokee, and one was Isabella, who was a slave. Mm-hmm. But that's such a small part of my heritage, and I didn't grow up that way because I'm pale. Nobody treated me that way, and I didn't go through that.
Neither did I, and I don't want to be hypocritical, but I do want everybody to look at multiple aspects of history, because history isn't just looked at through one prism. You follow what I'm saying? Or through one lens, and that's what I try to encourage here. Let's just take a break, come back. We got Stan Jones. I'm going to hold him for as long as I can. Be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Human beings have been making music for tens of thousands of years. It brings us together. It has the power to communicate emotions and ideas. It's a profound part of the human experience. Hear the stories behind the music you love and new music you might fall in love with. I'm Raina Duras. Join me for in-depth interviews with artists who are continuing that musical history on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
On Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we are not afraid to stand up to the high and mighty like Jeff Bezos.
He had that big cowboy hat on. He looked like a shrink ray had hit Garth Brooks.
I'm Peter Sagal. Join me as we speak truth to power, at least until power agrees to buy us out, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.